2021 was the best year our multifamily business has ever had by far. Our existing properties just blew it out of the water in terms of collections and net operating income. And then we also did the biggest acquisitions we've ever done. We bought one for $49.8 million, which is the biggest that we've done. And we and then the current one that we have under contract, when that closes, we'll have acquired 670 units for about $108 million in a 12-month period, which for us is huge. 2021, fortunately, was pretty awesome over here. So,
welcome to the Action Academy Podcast.
Stand back while I celebrate freedom.
The show where we help you achieve financial independence with the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who've already earned their freedom.
The flags of freedom fly.
Choose to do what you want.
What you want.
With who you want.
With who you want.
When you want.
When you want.
With another episode today. Now, here's your host, Brian Lubin.
What's up? What's up? Hello for the first time, or welcome back to another episode of the Action Academy Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Lubin, bringing you the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who have already earned their freedom so that you can earn freedom in your life today. And I know people are asking, man. People are asking. They're saying, Brian, are you going to stop bringing the heat with these guests here in January? And my friend, I'm so sorry to tell you, but the answer is just simply no. I can't stop bringing the heat because I've got these people that have got stuff to say and they keep coming on. And it's episode after episode, and these are all coming in together in a really nice tandem here to where we had David Osborne a couple episodes back. We got Matt King as operations guy, and now I am very happy to add another operations genius to the mix, and that is Mr. Andrew Cushman. I'm just going to do him the justice of reading his own bio. Andrew Cushman is a former chemical engineer who found his entrepreneurial calling in real estate. In 2007, Andrew left his corporate position to start a business of real estate investment, starting off flipping single-family properties in Southern California. Sensing a shift in the market in 2011, Andrew transitioned to multifamily acquisitions and has successfully syndicated and repositioned over 2,300 multifamily units. And that, my friends, that number has grown substantially. So they are on the short quest to 10,000 units right now, and Andrew runs one of the largest syndications, one of the groups that I'm associated with, GoBundance, and David is actually one of his principal partners in this business. Andrew's a super down-to-earth guy. He just loves skiing, loves having a good time with his friends and family, but I can vouch for him. He's an operational genius. He's one of the guys that would never admit it himself. But when it comes to market cycles, numbers, just pure logic and data, Andrew's the go-to guy for a lot of very successful and wealthy individuals. And so I'm very excited to have him on the show today to be able to give his insights on the market, what he's doing to play defense. We actually go towards the end of the episode, we go into where he sees the market cycles going with all of the data that he has access to, which is a lot. And also a buyer's journey from somebody that owns single family to how they can go step by step into buying apartment complexes. So this is an awesome action-packed episode for everyone. As we transition here into the episode, I have two things for you and one ask of you. So that's a buy one, get one free special. That's a good deal. Anyways, the resources that I have available for you are if you go in the show notes, which is if you scroll down and you see all the text that's in this episode, I'm going to have a link. If you're interested in joining GoBundance, the mastermind group that we talk about a lot, and you're an accredited investor, shoot the link. I've got the website and also a link to book a call to ask for more information about it. And then besides that, I also have the link for my mindset coach, Jason Dries. If you're interested in coaching, business coaching, mindset coaching, he's the one that does the coaching for Brandon Turner. Reach out to the link there, and then you can book a call with his team and look at his website as well. Those are my two value offers to you. My one ask, please leave us a rating and review. Help us grow. Help us share the show. If you find value in today's episode, please send it to your friends, anybody that you think would be interested. It is greatly appreciated. And with that, let's get to...
All right. Mr. Cushman, welcome, sir.
Good to be here, Brian. How you doing?
I am doing perfectly fine. over here. It is 2022. We're finishing up 21, and it was a wild year to say the least. So my first question to you is actually going to be, if you could pick maybe one or two wins from 2021 that just absolutely made your year, what would you say for last year?
I'm going to cheat, and I think I'm going to pick three.
Oh, man.
Yeah, despite I have two kids, we have four of us, and we were all, you know, stuck in the house together for 18 months because we're in California and they shut everything down. Despite all being in the house together for that long of time, we still all got along great. And after 17 years, my marriage is better than ever. So that's definitely a win. Despite not being able to go to the gym when they shut that down, I'm in the best shape of my life. And then in our business, 2021 was the best year our multifamily business has ever had by far. Our existing properties just blew it out of the water in terms of collections and net operating income. And then we also did the biggest acquisitions we've ever done, which currently we bought one for $49.8 million, which is the biggest that we've done. And then the current one that we have under contract, when that closes, we'll have acquired 670 units for about $108 million in a 12-month period, which for us is huge. 2021, fortunately, was pretty awesome over here. So,
yeah, it sounds like it. That's actually my segue to my second question, which is actually something that I'm stealing from the GoBundance page. So it's been fun for me to ask, but what is your wildest, most ambitious goal for 2022 that just absolutely scares the hell out of you?
Again, I'll give you two. I paid a deposit to go to Antarctica this year to climb and ski 8 to 10 mountains in Antarctica. That's another reason I need to be in good shape. And so I'm doing that. So that's both excitement and a little, oh, geez, I'm really doing this. And then the second, I'm a former engineer. I'm really good at analysis. I'm really good at finding deals and putting deals together. I'm not as good at being a visionary and a business builder. And we're at that phase where that's really what I need to be doing more of. We made two hires a couple of years ago that have been phenomenal. And we're at the point where we need to hire some more people. So now, this is turning into a real business with, you know, HR and, okay, I need to do EOS and all this other stuff. So I'm looking forward to that and a little terrified of it, bringing on some people that are going to have legit salaries. And it just makes things bigger, more complicated, more people depending on me. So it'll be a good thing, but it's definitely stretching me beyond my comfort.
Very well put. And that actually brings up an interesting segue there between visionaries and operators, because I feel like a lot of the people that we roll with are visionaries. So everyone's got all this grand vision, grand ideas, grand plans. And then that's myself included. But we find it very difficult to put tangible operations to it. And you're an operations guy through and through. Like you even ran, that was actually your job after engineer, right? You managed plants.
Good memory, man. As an engineer, the company that I worked for used to send me around to plants that were underperforming and basically stick me there some of these places were remote. Oh gosh. I used to say I was stationed there, and they'd station me there for 6 to 8 months to turn it around. And then once it was running well, hand it off to somebody else, and then I could come home. But yeah, that's exactly what it did. I was operations, even as an engineer.
So do you think it'd be more beneficial for you to try to push out of your comfort zone and your natural zone of genius or just hire a visionary? How does that even look?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Fortunately, to me, the visionary piece is probably the least outsourceable part of building a business. And at least in terms of, okay, I'm going to hire like the guy to do it. How I have accomplished that so far and how I intend to accomplish that is by surrounding myself with a highly competent, basically call it board of advisors or board of directors. So you mentioned David Osborne is one of our business partners. Clearly, he's somebody that I talk to and rely on for visionary and stuff like, okay, if we want to take this from, we've done 2,600 units to 10,000, what are the business building aspects of that? And of course, David, Pat, and Tim. And then I also have a pretty close circle of other multifamily operators that I'm in regular touch with that are ahead of me. They're somewhere in that 3 to 15,000 unit mark. And so I talk with them and rely on them to. So it's not that I don't have the vision. I do. as far as, hey, this is where we want to be. What I struggle with a little bit is how do you, building from what got us to 2,600 units is not what's not necessarily what's going to get us to 10,000. And so just putting those pieces together. But again, so fortunately, I've got a ton of much smarter people surrounding me that I can rely on and talk to.
I feel like that's a good litmus test, like aside from IQ, about figuring out how intelligent somebody actually is when they just constantly downplay it. And they're like, oh, yeah, I just surround myself with people that are way smarter than me. That's when you know you're a smart guy. But before we go into your backstory there, you prefaced it with your background in chemical engineering and then operations there. My other question before we jump into that is, as a visionary, it's the operator role from the flip side of your equation is becoming more and more difficult to find a partner with, finding the correct operator, quote unquote. So as an operator, what are you looking for in a visionary to be able to partner with them? So if there's a visionary that's floating out there in the stratosphere and they've got all these big ideas, as a very cold, hard, like very competent operator, what is it that would attract you to them to pursue business together? Does that make sense?
Yeah. You know, I'm not quite sure what the answer to that would be. You know, I guess, again, it would be, I don't think it would necessarily be a new partner. It would probably be a consultant or coach or mentor type role. Mm-hmm. And what that person would look like is just someone who's already done it. And can be like, oh, hey, yeah, Andrew, you have the vision to be at 10,000 units and I'm already there. So I can coach you or consult you on, hey, this is when I added an asset manager. This is when I added a bookkeeper. This is when, you know, this is how we paid for these people, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it'd probably be more of a, I've been blessed to have really good partners from day one. And while partnership is definitely a key way to success in any business, but in even especially in multifamily, I think a lot of people run around jumping into partnerships a little too easily. They're kind of like marriages. They're much easier to get into than they are to get out. And it would be more of a, like I said, I think a mentor / consultant / that kind of role. So
sure, that makes sense. And then with your partnerships, do you think that was necessarily luck or more so intention and just putting yourself in the correct rooms like you were talking about?
That's funny. There's definitely a big piece of intention, but whenever you connect the dots in reverse, it's always, holy crap, how fortunate was that? You know? So yeah. To go way back, how we transitioned from engineering to real estate is my wife and I were looking for something to turn into our own business and to be able to leave our jobs. And we just were aware and looking for something. I was in the break room at my job and someone had left the Wall Street Journal business section open on the table. And the front page of that section was an article about this guy who was flipping houses. And I just, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I took it home, read it, went in, and then I found out that he had learned it from this lady who was teaching, not like a big guru, but she was teaching like groups of 12 people in California how to do it. Mm-hmm. And we went and my wife and I researched everything. She was like, you know what? This seems like it would actually work. And then we paid to go to her course. And then there's a whole backstory to how that worked. Because it was a struggle for me to learn how to do it, but I also believed that it would work. And so we eventually did make it work, quit my job, and then transitioned into multifamily 4 years later. And I'm sorry, I think I lost track of what your original question was.
No, it's fine. I lost track too. And that's the beauty of this show. We just go with the flow. So that was actually a perfect segue there. So you find an article from the Wall Street Journal, and then it's about someone talking about flipping houses. And then you go into all of this. Two things there. The first thing is you said you instantly hired someone to do this. In the coaching sphere and everything, I remember you saying this before in another episode of a podcast, and it resonated with me because I've since hired people to help me. I've hired professional coaches, mentors, even Jason Dries for my mindset. And that from what you said was the catalyst on doing that. So do you, for somebody that's getting started, is that the same advice that you would still give, is find someone that's done it, been there, done that. And then, yeah, it's okay to pay the money. It's worth it.
Absolutely. Yes. And that would, so your original question, was it intentional or luck that, you know, we found all these partners and mentors? And I would say these $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 courses and boot camps where they promise that they'll just package it all up and everything is done for you. Ignore that crap, because that's like someone telling you, hey, I'll be your gym trainer. I'll do the workouts for you and you'll get fit. It doesn't work that way. You still have to do it. But with that said, absolutely find a mentor, coach, advisor. And it doesn't have to be, a lot of times we get into this narrow definition of that. Okay, well, it's got to be a guy I pay $10,000 a year or something like that. No, a mentor can be someone that maybe you call once a quarter and they can answer a few questions. Paid mentors, paid coaches. Yeah, absolutely. Just vet them to make sure that they really are in the business and are really doing the business. So for us, when we decided we're going into house flipping back in 2006, and we did our first deal in 07, we paid for that course. And then we went to the 3-day course and we're like, yep, we're going to do this. And so we said, all right, if we're going to do this, we're all in. So we hired, the lady teaching it had a small group of coaches, one of whom was Tim Rode. And
no way. I didn't know about that part.
Yeah.
One of the coaches was him.
One of the coaches was Tim Rode. But here's the best part. So me being me, I interviewed all four coaches and picked a guy who was not Tim Rode. And so learned the flipping business from him. And then after about a year and a half, then we said, you know, I want to get a different perspective to add on to this. So then I hired Tim Rode. Yeah. What's that?
So Tim's like your opposite.
Yeah. Tim's also one of our business partners. And I love the guy. Yeah. He's one of the biggest reasons that you and I are talking today and we've been able to get to where we are. So we brought Tim on as a coach. Then when we decided, my wife and I decided to go into multifamily, we said, you know what, let's do the same approach. So we asked our first coach, hey, do you know anybody that we could learn the multifamily business from? He's like, yeah, actually I do. And he connected me with a guy who had done about 800 units and we hired him to hold our hand for the first year. So a big part of that was, it was very intentional. My wife and I said, this is what we want to do. And we had reasons for that. And then we intentionally asked people, hey, do you know somebody? The luck part is the first guy we asked knew the perfect guy for us to hire to learn the business from. And that relationship worked out so well that first coach is actually, we ended up becoming partners doing 6 deals together. We're still partners to this day. And then where Tim Rode loops back in is Tim invested in my first multifamily deal. And then he brought in Pat and David as investors. And then after a couple of deals, we were at a conference together and they pulled me aside and said, you know what? We don't want to just invest. We want to actually be partners. And so that's how the four of us became partners, I guess, 8 or 9 years ago now. If you go look at that in reverse, there's a whole lot of luck and divine providence, but there's also intention. It's a combination of both, right? Basically, the harder you work, the more intentional you are, the luckier you tend to get. So that seems to be kind of how things have worked out.
Yeah. And then that was going to be one of my other questions about the genesis of the group. And the reason I'm asking all of this, for everybody listening, Andrew here works with David Osborne, Pat Hyben, Tim Rode. These are all guys in the mastermind group that we're in called GoBundance, which is a high-level mastermind for high-net-worth individuals. And all of them are going to be on this podcast. So for you listening, you're going to be introduced to all of them. And Andrew, I'll brag on Andrew since he won't for himself. He'll just tell you the numbers. I'll tell the personality side of it. But Andrew is the cold hard operations genius behind it all. He's the one that's been managing the syndications. And then Tim, Pat, and David were like, hey, we got to bankroll this guy. Like, he's got something going. He's on fire. Like, I've talked to Tim about it. He's like, as soon as I did that first deal with Andrew, it was over. I was like, take all of my money, go, run, be free. And so that leads to my next question, because this is something I was specifically saving for you. Is this something that you are branching out into? Is that something that you're going to branch out into, is the coaching and education space yourself? Is that something you have in place, or are you going to go into that space later, or are you too busy?
Yeah, I enjoy it. I enjoy coaching. I don't generally advertise it, but I do one-on-one coaching up to two people at a time. But other than that, not right now, just because our main focus really is on, you know, streamlining operations, streamlining the business, and growing it in a way. I see a lot of operators in all types of businesses. They start out small with a certain culture and a certain way of doing things. And then as they scale, they tend, in many cases, tend to lose that. And so that's one of the things that we're trying to be very aware of and intentional about, is that, you know, as we scale and grow, that deal number 27 is done and operated and managed the same way as deal number 2 or 5 or 6, and that everything stays the same. So as much as I enjoy, we actually did do a mastermind during 2020. It went great and we really enjoyed it. But what we decided for this year is, actually it was 2020 and then into 2021. But what we decided for this year is we didn't feel like we had the bandwidth to do both really well. And so we just want to focus on growing the business and trying to do good deals right now. And then we might do mastermind and coaching again sometime down the road. But
sure. So for someone listening now that's looking to get into multifamily, do you have any resources that you could send, where we could send them to be like, hey, this person or this organization tends to be pretty good by me. I think this would be a good resource to head towards.
Yeah, if someone wants to reach out, our website just vpacq.com, Vantage Point Acquisitions. If you reach out through that and you're like, hey, here's my goals, and we're happy to connect you with either resources or people that we think might be the best to help you get there. There are some good, as much as they get a bad, some, you know, the industry gets a bad name, there are some legitimate and well-intentioned teachers and coaches out there, and we're happy to give our recommendations.
Perfect. And for anybody listening, this is the Action Academy, so I would expect you to take action if you're serious about this. Whatever Andrew says, go with it. This is no, I trust you, because I trust you in this industry. Like, this is your thing. And in the back half of this show, like, we'll get into that. We'll get into the specific multifamily niche and where you see it going, how to get into it there. But my next question is, I remember Jay Scott, he was talking about how he has flipped all these houses. And now looking back, I don't know if I would have done. He's like, I would have maybe leaned into multifamily a little bit sooner, or I would have held on to more of the properties. So looking back, is the house flipping something that you would have still done, or would you have gone into multifamily sooner?
The short answer is we still would have done it. And the reason is, going into single family first is by no means a prerequisite to get into multifamily. Did it help having 4 years of flipping experience? Absolutely. Because, you know, I've had 4 years of dealing with contractors, 4 years of creative financing, just 4 years of doing real estate. So it's definitely not a prerequisite. But for us, it was the right stepping stone, because it got us... Got both my wife and I out of our W-2 jobs, and it allowed us to take advantage of a hopefully unique opportunity in real estate history, in that we were in Southern California, a place with ridiculous amounts of houses and ridiculous amounts of equity and everyone going into foreclosure. And everyone was scared of real estate. So we were the only ones out there doing it for about the first two years. And we were just able to flip houses for incredible margins. And it built the foundation to allow us to transition more easily into multifamily. So for us, it was a good stepping stone. For other people, and also we're in a different part of the market cycle right now. For other people, it's not necessarily... not necessary to go into flipping first. In fact, I would say if you already know your goal is multifamily, skip the flipping thing. We didn't know that. We just wanted to get out of our jobs. Sure. And we found flipping. And then how we got into multifamily is, flipping was awesome for 4 years, but it felt like another job, right? You're only as good as your last flip. You flip that, you put a check in the bank, and there's nothing left. You got to better go. Yeah, you better go find the next deal. And so in 2010, we're like, hey, this is great, but what's the next big thing? Because by then, equity was down. Everyone else and their brother was trying to flip, and it was just the business was changing. And we said, we just had a huge recession, which means we're probably going to have a significant expansion, which means more jobs and more household formation. And everyone just got foreclosed on, so they can't buy a house, which means now they're going to, okay, we have an economic expansion, job creation, household formation, and a growing renter pool. We should figure out how to get into apartments. So, and that's why and when we made the shift. Our first deal was in 2011, which was the bottom of the apartment market. You know, depending on where in the country you were, it was anywhere between 2009 and 2013. Sure. So the timing was perfect then. The timing would not have been as good for us to get into multifamily in 2006 and seven. So again, looking back, actually, I think it worked out perfect for us to go single family, then multi. But at this point, I wouldn't say that's a requirement by any means.
Perfect. Very well said. So you were talking about market cycles, and then that's something that's the main topic of every headline of every real estate publication, is every blog post, is every single question that everyone's asking. And I remember that even us, we were asking you at Steamboat. I was in the room with you when we were talking about the multifamily in Atlanta and around Georgia. So my question for you for this part of the market cycle. So for people that are looking to get into multi in this cycle, I know that there's frustrations that are growing in the asset class and in the environment. So I guess my question for you would be, before we go into kind of how to get into this in general, I guess the question is going to be, how do we make sure that we are still being safe with our acquisitions now in multifamily? What specific bumpers are you putting in your underwriting to make sure that the deals are still safe? And then maybe where do you see this market cycle going? And maybe where do you see that next kind of niche going into this as we kind of phase out of this next cycle? A lot of questions there. I hope that you picked the two or three I was trying to get across.
Yeah, no worries. So I guess we'll start big picture first in that, where is this cycle going?
Your crystal ball.
Yeah, the answer, I know my crystal ball broke, so I found a Ouija board is much more accurate. Now, the first part of that is, what's your time frame? Mm-hmm. If your time frame is 3 years or 4 years, yeah, that might be a point where we're seeing some weakness, right? If your time frame is 10 or 15 years, you're fine. But that's the beautiful thing about real estate in the United States, is if you wait long enough, time will cover all errors. So as far as the cycle now, there's no question we are high up. We're well above, all forms of real estate are well above where they were in 2008, 9, and 10. But what's interesting, and I've heard a lot of people much smarter than me say, is that we already had the recession in the down cycle. That was the COVID-19 recession, and then the government response to it basically has kicked off another upcycle. It doesn't feel like we had a change in the cycle, because for all of us who've been operating, its operations have continued to be great straight through, and prices, you know, held flat in 2020 and then took off again in 2021. So it doesn't feel like a new cycle. But you know, I've heard a lot of people with far more experience than me say, actually, we just started a new cycle, and basically, it's almost like a cycle on top of a cycle. So there's that aspect of it. I don't know if I fully buy into that. If I were to guess, I think we are in an extension of the previous cycle because of the stimulus, because of the growth, economic growth and inflation that's going to happen in the next few years. I think those things extend the cycle even further than it naturally would have gone. And yeah, there could be a recession or a bit of a pullback in maybe 23, 24, 25, something like that. However, big picture, multifamily and real estate in general, I would say, again, with niche exceptions, is probably looking at a very long bull market. And taking it back to multifamily, we have a huge housing shortage of all forms of housing. For single family to buy, multifamily to rent. Again, there's select markets where maybe they're going to overbuild a little, but in general, we are way short on housing. all the stuff built in the 50s, 60s, and 70s is becoming obsolete and falling apart. Not only are we not building enough, we're losing, or we constantly lose housing units to obsolescence every year. And that tends to not really get tracked, and no one kind of pays attention to it, but that also happens. So we have a shortage. We also have, we still have population growth in the country. And then we are shifting to become more and more of a renter nation for, again, a variety of demographic reasons. Sure. And so the number one, the most important fundamental for housing and multifamily is your supply-demand balance. And we have structural imbalance in that we have a very difficult to change situation of demand that far exceeds supply for housing and multifamily. And that alone will be enough to continue to drive multifamily forward. Again, I'm not saying that there may not be some slowdowns or dips along the road. As far as a huge crash or something like that, it's tough to see that, especially with rents going up. Inflation tends to benefit real estate because it becomes more expensive to build new real estate. So that drags up the cost of existing real estate. And then wages go up, which means people can afford higher rents. And then the value of apartments is determined by the net operating income, which of course is the first, you know, is how much do you collect minus your expenses. So if your rents are going up and you're collecting more, your net operating income is going up. Therefore, the value of your property is going up. So then you also, you ask, okay, you know, what are your margins? What are your bumpers going forward? One is, if possible, we try to get fixed rate debt.
Sure.
Because that would be, if you say, okay, that's great, Andrew, but what are the risks that could upend that? If interest rates were to dramatically rise and stay there, that could definitely cause a plateau or maybe even a cooling of pricing. Because as the interest rates rise, debt becomes more expensive, which means one of two things has to happen. Either investors have to accept lower yield, because mm-hmm. Or prices have to come down to compensate so they can still get the yield. So
that's a lever that gets pulled too.
Definitely. A dramatic rise in interest rates could cause pricing to cool a bit or flatten. Again, I think that would be a short-term thing. And then also, just because interest rates go up doesn't automatically mean that happens, because if you have net operating income growth that is higher than the growth in the expense of your debt, then prices can still rise, right? So those are your two competing factors. You've got your net operating income, which is basically, that's going to determine the value of your property largely, and then the cost of debt and interest rates. As long as the net operating income is expanding at a faster rate than the expense of the debt or cap rates, then prices stay the same or keep going up. But that is definitely something we're watching. And we're trying, again, where possible, we go for fixed debt just to eliminate the risk of interest rates rising us. Also, we tend to go for longer term debt now, mm-hmm. just because, okay, what if we get to year four and we are in a recession or prices are down and it's not a good time to sell? Well, if you're balloon payment loan is due that year, that's when you can get in trouble, when you're forced to sell real estate at a time where it's not a good time to sell. And so the biggest margin, though, the biggest bumper that we put on is everyone loves to talk about internal rate of return or IRR and equity multiple and all these things, and those are important, but your biggest bumper is really your cash, because again, the only time the value of your property matters is when you refinance it or you sell it. And if you have the cash flow to make it through a difficult time and just wait until it is a good time to sell, you're going to be fine. So that's your biggest bumper, is making sure that you have the cash flow and cash reserves just sitting in an account to get through any hard times that will eventually come. And so those are the margins and the bumpers that, among other things that we're putting in. So
perfect. And then for somebody listening that isn't as familiar with multifamily as they are with residential single family, what are the loan terms and lengths that are pretty common throughout the industry and that you're looking at? Is it still fixed 30-year, 15-year, or you're talking about a 4 or 5 year balloon payment?
Yeah, that's a really good clarification. Yeah, there's all kinds of different types of debt, but to simplify it down into two buckets, there's more kind of bridge. Your two biggest buckets are bridge lending and agency. So bridge lending is it's debt funds. It's just different lenders out there that say, okay, we're going to give you a loan for 3 years. And the reason they call it bridge is it's saying, okay, you've got a property that you're going to, maybe it's half vacant, or maybe you're going to do a huge renovation and bump the rents. We're going to be a bridge from today when you acquire it until when your property is worth more and you either sell it or refinance into agency debt, right? So you've got your bridge loans are the normal term on that are 2 years or 3 years. And then in many cases, by paying 1% of the loan balance or 1 point, you can extend that term for 1 year up to a grand total of 5 years. The tricky part is you have to qualify for those extensions. You can't just pay for it and say, I want it. If you say, I want an extension, they're going to come in and they're going to look at your cash flow, your debts, or all these different things. And they may say no, right? So the benefit of a bridge loan are generally good interest rates. They're almost always interest only, and they tend to give you higher leverage, 75, sometimes 80%. So that's why the bridge loans are probably 75% of multifamily transactions today. The downside is they're typically due in 3 years, sometimes two. And if the market shifts or the finance market dries up like they did in 2008, in that 3 year time period hits, you could be in trouble. So that's the downside of the bridge lending. The other side is agency, which is your Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. Those are your government sponsored agencies. And the terms on those vary dramatically, but on the short end, it's usually 5 years. On the long end, it's usually 12. And it typically goes 5, 7, 10, 12. Those are your most common terms on an agency loan. The downside of agency is they tend to cut you a little bit on leverage, right? A bridge lender might give you 75%. The Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac might only give you 65. So if you're tight on equity, that's where agency might make your deal a little tougher. And it is tougher if you're trying to bring on investors who want a certain yield. It's harder to achieve that yield if you have to put an extra 10% of equity into the deal. It makes it a safer deal, but it doesn't look as sexy on a pro forma, right? Because the IRR was just, because everything just went down because you're having to bring more equity. They'll go in at 65 and you can go again, 5, 7, 10, 12. But the upside is you know what, you can lock an interest rate for 12 years and you can also get what's called a supplemental, which is the commercial equivalent of getting a second mortgage on your house. So you don't want to refinance those agency loans because there's huge, it's called yield maintenance, but basically it's a huge prepayment penalty. And absolutely, it can give me 10%, 20% of the loan balance. It can take me massive. So you do have to be careful and keep that. If you want to sell in 3 years, don't get fixed agency debt. But you can get a supplemental, again, which is like the equivalent of getting a second mortgage on your house. So you can lock in fixed rate, interest rate protection at acquisition. Then you do your value add, and now you can pull cash out with that supplemental. And now you've got the best of both worlds. And then guess what? If the market shifts on you in 6 months or 12 months or 18 months, and you're halfway through the renovation and you didn't hit your targets, okay, the worst case scenario is now you don't do your supplemental, but you still have a fixed rate mortgage. You can still cash flow. And again, your worst case is now you're just waiting longer than you planned and maybe not distributing as much as you planned, but you're not losing money or you're not being forced to sell a building when you don't want to. So those are the debt is a huge piece of putting together the correct business plan for an apartment complex. And I'd say it's even more important today than it has probably been in the last 10 years.
Yeah, because that like rate, terms, and debt are all like the lever that you can pull, all the levers that you can pull. So when it comes to single family, where you may have people that are buy and hold, where they're like, I'm going to buy all these single family houses and hold them for 30 years, 40 years, and then do something with them. So it sounds like for apartments, you're more so going in for a 3 to 5 year value add, take your capital, and then go to the next value add. Correct.
Yeah, in many cases. So, I mean, most of our deals are syndicated, which means, let's say we need $10 million in equity, then we investors will come in for 100 or 200 or a million or whatever. And so most investors like to have a target. Hey, I'm going to get my money back in 3 years or 5 years or 7 years. It's harder for people to come together and be like, we'll sell it someday, right? I mean, it's just, I remember most of our deals are 5 years. We did a couple that were 10. And I literally had a couple of our investors say, I like the deal, but I might be dead. I'm like, way to think positively, man.
David Sinclair on speed dial.
I'm just like, okay, I get it. So people generally want to have a 5-year exit or something close to that, or at least know what it is. You know, lots of people do want 10-year, but they want to know that up front so they can plan on it. But really, you want to structure the debt so that you have some flexibility, because it may be when you buy it on day one, the spreadsheet and all of your research might say, hey, year five is going to be the perfect time to sell this. But when you get to year five, just like Mike Tyson says, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. When you get to year five, it could be a completely different world, and you need to have some built-in flexibility just in case.
All right. Awesome. So we've done a good case study and TED talk basically on playing defense here. We've talked cash flow. We've talked good debt. We've talked about good terms and everything. In our last 15 minutes, what I want to do is I want you to be able to take us on a journey, like a buyer's journey of someone that's, heck, selfishly, I'm even in the same position. It's like I have some residential single family. So I'm the archetype you're speaking to. A lot of people are in that same boat. They maybe have some single family, maybe a small multi, maybe just like a quad or something, maybe an 8-unit apartment. And they're like, okay, cool. I have these cash flow goals. I'm sick of doing onesie twosie. I want to just go ahead and jump into a multifamily. In this next 15 minutes, can you maybe walk us through what that buyer's journey looks like from someone that's deciding, okay, I'm all in, I'm doing multifamily, and this is what I want to buy. Can you walk through what they need to get prepped for with maybe looking for the property, what they need to have set up in like cash reserves, what are they looking to put down, stuff like that. Should they start a syndication? Just a high level view for the next 15 minutes and dive into this.
Yeah, I'll get started and then feel free to just jump in and redirect or ask questions as you go. So the first thing is get clear on what your goals are. Are your goals to buy on your own balance sheet for your own portfolio and just build up like basically a retirement account? Or are your goals to get into a syndication business and buy 5,000 units and have a huge pool of investors? Those are two very different tracks. And so number one, figure out where you want to take it. And then once you know that, you need to decide, okay, what type of properties are you looking for? And okay. I'm a big believer in live where you like to live and invest where you get the best returns. And that's why I live in Southern California. I've literally gone surfing and snow skiing on the same day. But I sure as heck don't invest here. It is a very anti-business. It is very anti-landlord and is very litigious, right? So I live here, and then all of our investments are in the Southeast United States.
Atlanta. So, let's go.
Where yeah, I'm at. No, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Our Anthony, our amazing acquisitions guy, is based in Atlanta for a reason. So decide, where you want to invest, and don't let, if you happen to live in Dallas or Atlanta, great. But if you happen to live in San Francisco or Portland or something like that, don't be like, oh, geez, everything's so expensive here and we've got all these problems and blah, blah, blah. And I guess I can't do this. Well, no, absolutely not. Go buy David Green's book, Long Distance Real Estate Investing. It's geared towards single family, but the principles apply to multifamily just the same. So number one is don't worry about geography, right? Just go pick markets that you want to invest in. And the short version of how to pick that is number one, the two most important things, find markets that have population growth and job growth, right? Those are the two things you're going to put a tailwind behind your multifamily sailboat. Once you've got that market, get very clear on what you're looking for. You decide, okay, I am looking for properties between 10 and 40 units that were built in 1980 to 2010 that are in neighborhoods where the median income is 40,000 or higher, crime is low, population growth is at or above the national average and it's not in the flood zone, right? Have very clear criteria on what you're looking for. Because number one, there's so much stuff out there, you cannot look at it all. So you have to, in order to have success, you need to know exactly what you're looking for. Because eventually you'll get to the point where you have 20 new properties in your email inbox every morning and you have to be able to go delete, oh, these are the two that are worth looking at. So you need to know that for you. Second of all, by having very clear criteria, that is how you train everybody else to send you what you're looking for. So that when Brian is like, hey, I'm trying to buy 10 to 40 unit properties in San Antonio, and you've been talking to brokers and doing that for 6 months or 9 months or whatever, and then a broker has lunch with a guy, yeah, I'm moving up and I've had this 30 unit for 10 years and that's too small, I'm going to sell it. That broker thinks, oh, this is perfect for Brian, let me just call him. And then you get an off-market deal. So be very clear, pick your market, and then be very clear on what you're looking for. Then figure out, you've got to put your team together. And this applies whether it's local or long distance. And part of that is deciding on what your strengths and weaknesses are, right? So maybe you have a finance degree and you really understand analyzing deals and running the numbers and doing all that kind of stuff, but you don't know anybody who can invest with you, right? If you need $3 million to do a deal, maybe you can raise $5,000 that you're going to run short, right? So you may need to partner with somebody that is really good at raising money. Or maybe it's these days we meet a lot of the opposite. People who have a big network and can raise a lot of money, but they need to find an operator or someone to do deals with. So you're going to need to, and some people have both, right? Some people can put together both. So figure, you know, out what roles that you can do well, and then which roles you need to either partner with or outsource. And then when you get to that market, your number one most important person or group on your team is going to be your management. If you've got a 10 unit in your backyard, can you self-manage that? Yeah. In fact, I would almost say it's probably better to do that. But if you're doing multifamily that's not in your back for many reasons, and this could be a whole nother podcast, I highly recommend hiring competent, experienced third-party management that specializes in the type of property that you are buying. And then you become a really good asset manager that manages them. That is the key to successful third-party management. Number one, hiring their company that's just the right fit for what you're doing. And then you being a really good asset manager and keeping them on track with the vision that you have for the properties, for the business overall, and maintaining really good communication and two-way exchange. So find your property management, because number one, they're going to manage your properties, but two, they're going to help you with acquisitions, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to be like, hey, broker just called me about this 30 unit in Southwest San Antonio. It's on, here's the cross streets. What do you think about this area? And a good property management company will be, unless you plan on packing heat, stay away. Yeah, stay clear. Or they'll be like, you know what? That area is a little rough, but it's coming back. And here's the pros, here's the cons. You know what? We'll have one of our managers go secret shop it tomorrow and write you up a quick little report of what we think. And hopefully you'll get a report that says, hey, here's some opportunities, here's some concerns. Overall, this could be a good investment, because, you know, they're going to be managing it. So a good property management company will say, we'll be like, oh, we don't, you know, a bad property, they're going to be like, oh, we don't want to manage this thing. And they'll tell you no. Good. So you're looking for a property management company that'll tell you no more than they tell you yes. And then there's other things on top of that. Of course, your closing attorneys, contractors, the other pieces of that, syndication attorney if you're syndicating. But the main thing is that property management company. So I've covered a lot of ground really quick. Any questions or what in the last few minutes, want to go a certain direction or?
No, I actually think that's perfect. I think that answers the question specifically and inadvertently, because you talked all about the team, and I feel like the team is the answer. So if you just focus on getting the right team in place, all the rest of the nitty-gritty questions that you've got to ask are going to be answered by that team. So any other question that I was going to, that I would ask you or that anybody would ask, like they can ask that property manager. They can ask that acquisitions guy that they're partnering with. They can ask that syndication attorney that they're partnering with. And then do you have any, I've got a couple more questions and I'm going to let you run so you can be able to get your kids. Do you have any, what are some specific resources that you think are best for people to go direct to? It's like, are there any specific YouTube channels, any specific books that you would recommend to be like, hey, this is good reading, or this is good material to get started?
Yeah, I already mentioned David Green's book. Yep. And then, you know, everyone's heard of it, but if you haven't read it, go do it. It's, of course, How to Win Friends and Influence People. That's for, that's for any business you're in just life in general. It's a little bit older, but it's still very good. David Lindahl has two books called Emerging Markets, and he talks about market cycles and stuff in there. And then also Multifamily Millions. Those two are really good. And then for negotiating, especially if you're going to be reaching out to sellers directly, Jim Camp's Start With No and Chris Voss's Never Split the Difference.
I was waiting for that one.
Yeah. And then as far as podcasts, obviously, of course, I listen to Bigger Pockets. There's a lot of multifamily podcasts out there. Michael Blanc has another one that's pretty good that I do listen to. I also listen to a podcast called Macro Voices, which is nothing to do with real estate. I don't think they've ever talked about real estate. What they talk about is very big picture economic issues, stuff like inflation and the supply chain and devaluation of the dollar and all that. And it can get a bit dense and heady at times, but it's really good information for helping you keep the big picture in mind and not let day-to-day things like, oh, hey, we set a new record for COVID cases, right? Scare you out of taking action or doing a business, because today's new record in COVID cases is going to be forgotten 6 months. And if you got a great deal in an apartment complex 5 years from now, when you go to sell it or whatever, today's peak in cases isn't gonna, no one's even gonna remember it. And not to minimize the impact COVID's had overall, but what I'm saying is that keeping some big picture is a good way to not get whipsawed by the day-to-day news cycle.
Exactly. And then at the end of the day, hire a coach.
Yes. Either hire a coach, or at the minimum, surround yourself with people who have already gotten to where you want to go. I'm not a super creative type. I knew from day one, I'm not going to create an app and make millions of dollars selling it, or, you know, write books or any of that kind of thing. I just needed to find something that I could execute on. And that's the beautiful thing about real estate, is there is nothing new in real estate. It's been the same forever. All the creative financing, it just, you know, everything cycles through. And so the great thing about that is practice R&D, right? Which in the corporate world is research and development. In real estate, it's rip off and duplicate. Go find somebody who's already doing what you want to do, learn it, and then go duplicate it in your world and in your market. And it's not a malicious thing, rip off and duplicate. It's just, it's already been figured out. You don't have to figure it out. You just need to go learn how someone else is doing it, and then you just go execute. And that's why I'm here talking to you. Is like, okay, well, this guy's doing it this way, and we can do that too.
And I feel multifamily and commercial is even more like blue green. You're not dealing with if your home appraiser is in a pissed off mood that day. Like, you're talking NOI, like that's where your cap rate and your valuation is coming from. So there's like less up to the imagination if someone's just was stuck in traffic on the way to your home appraisal. So,
well, and that's one of the beautiful things about multifamily is when you're in single family, you're at the mercy of the sale. With multifamily, you largely, there's definitely market forces outside of your control, but with multifamily, you have a large degree of control over how well that property runs and the NOI it generates. And therefore, if you have control over the NOI, you have control over the value of it. So if you are a really good operator, you can still increase your value even if you're in the down market.
Perfect. And as we finish here, how many units are you currently having under management?
We sold a bunch. So I think under management, we're right around 1,000 or 1,200. But total acquisitions when we close the current one, total acquisitions will be at about 2,600.
Awesome. And where can people find you to reach out to your fund if they're interested in investing?
You can just find, easy to find. Just if you Google Andrew Cushman or Vantage Point Acquisitions, lots of hits will come up. But the website is VPACQ. That's the easiest way to connect with us. And happy to talk with anyone. Or as you mentioned earlier, if you're looking to get into the business, hopefully direct you to some helpful resources.
Perfect. Well, that covers about every base right there, my friend. So thank you. It was everything you could have ever imagined and even more, my friend.
All right. Well.
I am very excited to see you over in Park City. We'll tear up a mountain together and talk more in depth on this.
All right. Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Brother, I appreciate it. Go get your kids.
All right. Take care.
See you, buddy.
You've been listening to the Action Academy podcast, helping you to choose what you want with who you want when you want.
You've been given the gift of freedom. Don't turn your back on that.
We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we hope you've gotten some practical and useful information. Make sure to like, rate, and review the show. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hook up with us on social media. Remember, financial independence is freedom.
The flags of freedom fly. Freedom fly.